we have Professor Cecilia Klingel on the line. She's with the UW-Madison Law School and has new report out about parole and supervision in Wisconsin. Professor Klingel, thanks so much for coming on the air today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so tell us about the supervision system here in Wisconsin. You say it's unique in a lot of ways, right?
It is. So one of the things that makes studying our system easier than studying other systems is that we have what's called a unified system of supervision. So people who are put on probation, that is people who may never go to jail or prison, but instead who are sentenced for criminal behavior in the community, are supervised by the very same agents who supervise people who are coming out of prison on what we call here extended supervision. Parole is the more commonly used name in most other states.
Hmm. Tell us about what's happening here. So what did you find? You looked into supervision cases and came up with some conclusions. So tell us a little bit about that study.
Sure. So there have been a number of different organizations around the state and country that have looked at supervision in Wisconsin to try to get a sense of what's working and what's not. And most of those studies have focused on really big data sets that give us information about a lot of people, but not a lot of information other than kind of what's on the surface. We can tell whether or not people are being revoked, but that's about all. And what I wanted to do was dig a little more deeply into the stories and the histories of supervision for people who were not succeeding, for whom the Department of Corrections was asking that supervision be terminated, or revoked is the word that we use, the technical term. And so I was able to do a study of a number of individuals from a period late in the year 2016 from six different areas across the state. And I looked at cases where the department had sought to revoke supervision and tried to get a sense of themes or common traits that I saw across those cases.
And so, you know, what are some of those themes? What are some things that are happening that send people back to jail?
So I think there are a lot of components to it. It's very complicated, but the good news is there are lots of things we could do to encourage success. So one piece that wasn't really surprising, but I think is important, is to see that among the people who fail on supervision, rates of substance abuse and addiction are higher than even for an ordinary criminal justice population. So in my particular study, more than 80% of the people who were being revoked had really intractable alcoholism or addiction to one or more additional illegal substances. And I think that points to the fact, to a couple of things. One, that we need to be able to provide people in our communities with better substance abuse care, but also that the problem is too big for corrections to tackle by itself. Another piece that really stood out were that although in Wisconsin we have particularly long periods of supervision, much longer than those authorized in other states, most people who fail on supervision do so pretty quickly. There have been lots of national studies that have consistent findings with the ones that I had in this case. And I think it makes us question how much bang we're getting for our buck by imposing really long periods of supervision on people when ordinarily they'll either fail quickly, or if they're succeeding, it may be a poor use of resources to continue to provide that level of supervision to those folks. And then I think the final thing I really would want to highlight is that many times people on supervision don't comply fully with their rules. And although agents feel a lot of understandable pressure to respond to those rule violations, they want to enforce the legitimacy of supervision, sometimes the response doesn't need to be imprisonment. And yet we don't have a lot of community-based sanctions for people to hold them accountable without locking them up. I think we could really do a good job developing more of those.
And so tell us a little bit about options for community-based sanctions. What does that mean, and what could that look like?
So I think the easiest example, and one that most people are familiar with in some way, is the idea of offering more opportunities for community service that are supervised. So the sanction is enforceable. It gives back to the community. There's a restorative component of asking people to contribute to their communities. But it also makes it clear to folks that they can't violate important conditions of supervision without some repercussion. We get more out of those kinds of community-based ways of engaging with people than we do by throwing someone into a jail cell. It's expensive and it doesn't accomplish a lot. Engaging people better with their communities can build up mentoring relationships and provide a lot back to the community that's restorative.
And what are some of the, you know, you mentioned, drug and alcohol addictions playing into this, but what are some of the specific rules that people are breaking that most commonly send them back to jail, prison?
Well, one of the things that I found is that you can't really simplify it to one rule. It's not typical for people to be revoked based on one rule violation, unless that were a very serious new crime that gets committed. Most of the time, agents want to work with people. They want to help them succeed. They're going to give them opportunities to improve with time. And so it's not usually one thing, it's an accumulation of many things. Some of the most common behaviors, rule violations that I saw that didn't involve new criminal activity that tended to land people in prison were a repeated failure to engage with programs that were offered, or what we call absconding, when people stop reporting and stop engaging with their agents. In some cases, people do that because they really just aren't interested in being supervised. And in those cases, it may be that revocation really is necessary. But sometimes a failure to engage signals a drug relapse, a mental health crisis, or an opportunity really for corrections to re-engage those individuals and to kind of receive the signal that something's going amiss and we might be able to stop it.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned before that these supervision periods are often really long, especially even compared to other states. So how long are we talking here? You know, how long are sometimes people, you know, paint a picture of that for us of the average, you know, or even lengthiest supervision sentence?
Well, so again, I was working with a sample of less than 100 cases, and so there certainly are going to be many lengths of supervision that I didn't capture in my study. The Badger Institute published its report and included not only the study that I did, which was really a deep dive into the data, but also a larger look at lengths of supervision, and found that although really what we often see in other jurisdictions is 2 to 3 years, maybe up to 5 years of supervision, about, I believe, 20% of the cases that they were looking at were really quite long and much more supervision was going on and on. The other piece that we have in Wisconsin is that we allow probation to be extended by judges. So even if someone served a full term of probation, that probation under certain conditions can be extended for indefinitely, and sometimes is even extended repeatedly. I had one case in my sample where an individual was on supervision originally for 2 years and then twice had that extended for an additional 2 years. Usually when that happens, people owe money, and very frequently the people on supervision don't have a lot of money to pay. We have other legal mechanisms for allowing for collections of debts that don't require people to remain under the jurisdiction of criminal courts.
What are some of the things that people are bouncing around to, you know, better use resources? And what do you think would be kind of a better way to shorten these supervision times and keep people out of jail?
Well, I can only speak to sort of from an academic perspective. I'm not in the know on all of the ideas that exist in our great state. But certainly I think that what we might do are some of the things I've already discussed. So one would be to cap lengths of supervision for both probation and to shorten the lengths of supervision that we authorize currently for those who are on extended supervision. In the federal system, for example, most individuals don't end up on supervision for more than 3 to 5 years, and no one accuses the federal system of sentencing too leniently. Mm-hmm. That's known as a particularly harsh sentencing system. So I think that, again, targeting those first years when people are most transitioning and need the most supervision makes sense. In addition, I think that creating opportunities to provide people with short proportional sanctions that are based in our communities and not in our jails and prisons would go a long way to promoting success and ensuring that people are held accountable to the rules that are imposed on them by courts.
All right. We've been speaking with Professor Cecilia Klingel. She's a UW-Madison law school professor, telling us about new reporting study she's done on supervision here in Wisconsin. Professor Klingel, thanks for chatting with me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.